The Hotel Experience of Mr. Pink Fluker by Richard Malcolm Johnston. Edited and licensed for text-to-speech by FreeClassicAudiobooks.com. Copyright 2004. Part 1. Mr. Peterson Fluker, generally called Pink, for his fondness for as stylish dressing as he could afford, was one of that sort of men who habitually seem busy and efficient when they are not. He had the bustling activity often noticeable in men of his size, and in one way and another had made up, as he believed, for being so much smaller than most of his adult acquaintance of the male sex. Prominent among his achievements on that line was getting married to a woman who, among other excellent gifts, had that of being twice as big as her husband. Fool who? On the day after his marriage he had asked, with a look at those who had often said that he was too little to have a wife. They had a little property to begin with, a couple of hundreds of acres, and two or three negroes apiece. Yet, except in the natural increase of the latter, the accretions of worldly estate had been inconsiderable till now, when their oldest child, Moran, was some 15 years old. These accretions had been saved and taken care of by Mrs. Fluker, who was as staid and silent as he was mobile and voluble. Mr. Fluker often said that it puzzled him how it was that he made smaller crops than most of his neighbors, when, if not always convincing, he could generally put every one of them to silence in discussions upon agricultural topics. This puzzle had led him to not unfrequent ruminations in his mind as to whether or not his vocation might lie in something higher than the mere tilling of the ground. These ruminations had lately taken a definite direction, and it was after several conversations which he had held with his friend Matt Pike. Mr. Matt Pike was a bachelor of some 30 summers, a four-time clerk consecutively in each of the two stores of the village, but latterly a trader on a limited scale in horses, wagons, cows, and similar objects of commerce, and at all times a politician. His hopes of holding office had been continually disappointed until Mr. John Sanks became sheriff, and rewarded with a deputyship some important special service rendered by him in the late very close canvass. Now was a chance to rise, Mr. Pike thought. All he wanted, he had often said, was a start. Politics, I would remark, however, had been regarded by Mr. Pike as a means rather than an end. It is doubtful if he hoped to become governor of the state, at least before an advanced period in his career. His main object now was to get money, and he believed that official position would promote him in the line of his ambition faster than was possible to any private station, by leading him into more extensive acquaintance with mankind, their needs, their desires, and their caprices. A deputy sheriff, provided that lawyers were not too indulgent in allowing acknowledgement of service of court processes, in postponing levies and sales, and in settlement of litigated cases, might pick up $300, a good sum for those times, a fact which Mr. Pike had known and pondered long. It happened just about then that the arrears of rent for the village hotel had so accumulated on Mr. Spouter, the last occupant, that the owner, an indulgent man, finally had said what he had been expected for years and years to say, that he could not wait on Mr. Spouter forever and eternally. It was at this very nick, so to speak, that Mr. Pike made to Mr. Fluker the suggestion to quit a business so far beneath his powers, sell out, or rent out, or tenant out, or do something else with his farm, march into town, plant himself upon the ruins of Jacob Spouter, and begin his upward soar. Now Mr. Fluker had many, and many a time acknowledged that he had ambition, so one night he said to his wife, "You see how it is here, Nervy. Farm and somehow don't suit my talents. I need to be flung more among people, to fetch out what's in me. Then thar's Moran, which is gittin' to be nigh onto a ground-up woman, and the child need the city, which you oblige to acknowledge is scarce about here, 6 mile from town. Your Bursam can stay here and raise butter, chickens, eggs, pigs, and so forth. Ma Pike say he jes know they's money in it, and special with the housekeeper careful and equinomical like you. It is always curious the extent of influence that some men have upon wives who are their superiors." Mrs. Fluker, in spite of accidents, had ever set upon her husband a value that was not recognized outside of his family. In this respect there seems a surprising compensation in human life. but this remark I make only in passing. Mrs. Fluker, and admitting in her heart that farming was not her husband's forte, hoped, like a true wife, that it might be found in the new field to which he aspired. Besides, she did not forget that her brother Sam had said to her several times privately, that if his Burr Pink wouldn't have so many notions, and would let him alone in his management, they would all do better. She reflected for a day or two, and then said, "Maybe it's best, Mr. Fluker. I'm willing to try it for a year, anyhow. We can't lose much by that. As for Matt Pike, I hain't the confidence in him you has. Still, he being a boarder and deputy sheriff, he might accidentally do us some good. I'll try it for a year providing you'll fetch me the money as it's paid in, for you know I know how to manage that better'n you do, and you know I'll try to manage it and all the rest of the business for the best." To this provision Mr. Fluker gave consent, qualified by the claim that he was to retain a small margin for indispensable personal exigencies. For he contended, perhaps with justice, that no man in the responsible position he was about to take ought to be expected to go about, or sit about, or even lounge about, without even a continental red in his pocket. The new house, I say new because tongue could not tell the amount of scouring, scalding, and whitewashing that excellent housekeeper had done, before a single stick of her furniture went into it. The new house, I repeat, opened with 6 eating boarders at $10 a month apiece, and 2 eating and sleeping at 11, besides Mr. Pike, who made a special contract. Transient custom was hoped to hold its own, and that of the county people under the deputy's patronage and influence to be considerably enlarged. In words and other encouragement Mr. Pike was pronounced. He could commend honestly, and he did so cordially. "The thing to do, Pink, is to have your prices regular, and make people pay up regular. $10 for eatin', jazz so, 11 for eatin' and sleepin', half a dollar for dinner, jazz so, quarter apiece for breakfast, supper, and bed, is what I call reasonable bond. As for me, I scarcely know how to regulate, because, you know, I'm a officer now, and in course I natural has to be away sometimes and on expenses at other places, and it seem like some loans ought by good rights to be made for that, don't you think so?" "Why, matter o' course, Matt, what you think? I ain't so powerful good at figures. Nervy is. S'posen you speak to her about it." "Oh, that's perfect and useless, Pink. I'm a officer o' the law, Pink, and the law consider women, well, I may say the law, she dealeth men, not women, and she expect her officers to understand figures, and if I hadn't o' understood figures Mr. Sanks wouldn't or dursn't to pine me his deputy. Me and you can fix them terms. Now see here, regular bod, eatin' bod, I mean, is $10, and sleepin' and single meals is cored into the figures you've sought for em. Ain't that so?" "Jazz so. Now, Pink, you and Mel keep a running account, you a chargin' for regular bod, and I alone to myself credits for my absentees, according to transient customers and single mealers and sleepers. Is that far, or is it not far?" Mr. Fluker turned his head, and after making or thinking he had made a calculation, answered, that seem far, Matt." "Certainly 'tis, Pink, I knowed you'd say so, and you know I'd never wish to be nothing but far with people I like I do you and your wife. Let that be the understanding, then, betwixt us. And Pink, let the understanding be jez betwixt us, for I've saw enough o' this world to find out that a man never makes nothing by makin' a blowin' horn o' his business. You make the t'others pay up spuncial, monthly. You and me can settle whensomever it's convenient, say 3 months from today. In course I shall talk up for the house whensomever and wharsomever I go or stay. You know that. And as for my bed," said Mr. Pike finally, "whensomever I ain't here by bedtime, you welcome to put any transient person in it, and also and likewise, when transient custom is pressin', and you cramped for beddin', I'm willin' to give it up for the time bein', and rather'n you should be cramped too bad, I'll take my chances somewhere else, even if I has to take a pallet at the head o' the star steps." "Nervy," said Mr. Fluker to his wife afterwards, "Matt Pike's a sensibler and a friendlier and a accommodatiner feller'n I thought." Then, without giving details of the contract, He mentioned merely the willingness of their boarder to resign his bed on occasions of pressing emergency. "He's talked mighty fine to me and Moran," answered Mrs. Fluker. "We'll see how he holds out. One thing I do not like of us do Owen, and that's the talking about Sim Markman to Moran, in Mac and game o' his country ways, as he call em. Such as that ain't right. It may be as well to explain just here that Simeon Markman, the person just named by Mrs. Fluker, a stout, industrious young farmer, residing with his parents in the country near, by where the Flukers had dwelt before removing to town, had been in Moran for a year or two, and waiting upon her fast ripening womanhood with intentions that he believed to be hidden in his own breast, though he had taken less pains to conceal them from Moran than from the rest of his acquaintance. Not that he had ever told her of them in so many words, but, oh, I need not stop here in the midst of this narration to explain how such intentions become known, or at least strongly suspected by girls, even those less bright than Moran Fluker. Simeon had not cordially endorsed the movement into town, though, of course, knowing it was none of his business, he had never so much as hinted opposition. I would not be surprised, also, if he reflected that there might be some selfishness in his hostility, or at least that it was heightened by apprehensions personal to himself. Considering the want of experience in the new tenants, matters went on remarkably well. Mrs. Fluker, accustomed to rise from her couch long before the lark, managed to the satisfaction of all regular boarders, single meal takers, and transient people. Moran went to the village school, her mother dressing her, though with prudent economy, as neatly and almost as tastefully as any of her schoolmates, while, as to study, deportment, and general progress, there was not a girl in the whole school to beat her, I don't care who she was. Part 2. During a not inconsiderable period, Mr. Fluker indulged the honorable conviction that at last he had found the vein in which his best talents lay, and he was happy in foresight of the prosperity and felicity which that discovery promised to himself and his family. His native activity found many more objects for its exertion than before. He rode out to the farm, not often, but sometimes, as a matter of duty, and was forced to acknowledge that Sam was managing better than could have been expected in the absence of his own continuous guidance. In town he walked about the hotel, entertained the guests, carved at the meals, hovered about the stores, the doctor's offices, the wagon and blacksmith shops, discussed mercantile, medical, mechanical questions with specialists in all these departments, throwing into them all more and more of politics, as the intimacy between him and his patron and chief boarder increased. Now as to that patron and chief boarder. The need of extending his acquaintance seemed to press upon Mr. Pike with ever-increasing. He was here and there, all over the county, at the county seat, at the county villages, at justices' courts, at executors' and administrator sales, at quarterly and protracted religious meetings, at barbecues of every dimension, on hunting excursions and fishing frolics, at social parties in all neighborhoods. It got to be said of Mr. Pike that a freer acceptor of hospitable invitations, or a better appreciator of hospitable intentions, was not and needed not to be found possibly in the whole state. Nor was this admirable deportment confined to the county in which he held so high official position. He attended, among other occasions less public, the spring sessions of the Supreme and County Courts in the four adjoining counties, the guest of acquaintance old and new over there. When starting upon such travels, he would sometimes breakfast with his traveling companion in the village, and, if somewhat belated in the return, sup with him also. Yet, when at Fluker's, no man could have been a more cheerful and otherwise satisfactory boarder than Mr. Matt Pike. He praised every dish set before him, bragged to their very faces of his host and hostess, and in spite of his absences was the oftenest to sit and chat with Moran, when her mother would let her go into the parlor. Here and everywhere about the house, in the dining room, in the passage, at the foot of the stairs, he would joke with Moran about her country beau, as he styled poor Sim Markman, and he would talk as, though he was rather ashamed of Sim, and wanted Moran to string her bow for the higher game. Burr Sam did manage well, not only the fields, but the yard. Every Saturday of the world he sent in something or other to his sister. I don't know whether I ought to tell it or not, but for the sake of what is due to pure veracity I will. on as many as 3 different occasions to Markman, as if he had lost all self-respect, or had not a particle of tact, brought in himself, instead of sending by a negro, a bucket of butter and a coop of spring chickens, as a free gift to Mrs. Fluker. I do think, on my soul, that Mr. Matt Pike was much amused by such degradation, however, he must say that they were all first-rate. As for Moran, she was very sorry for some, and wished he had not brought these good things at all. Nobody knew how it came about, but when the Flukers had been in town somewhere between 2 and 3 months, some Markman, who to use his own words had never bothered her a great deal with his visits, began to suspect that what few he made were received by Moran lately with less cordiality than before, and so one day, knowing no better, in his awkward, straightforward country manners, he wanted to know the reason why. Then Moran grew distant, and asked Sim the following question: "You know where Mr. Pike's gone, Mr. Markman?" Now the fact was, and she knew it, that Moran Fluker had never before, not since she was born, addressed that boy as Mr. The visitor's face reddened and reddened. "No," he faltered in answer, no, ma'am, I should say. I don't know where Mr. Pike's gone." Then he looked around for his hat, discovered it in time, took it into his hands, turned it around 2 or 3 times, then, bidding goodbye without shaking hands, took himself off. Mrs. Fluker liked all the Marchmans, and she was troubled somewhat when she heard of the quickness and manner of Sim's departure, for he had been fully expected by her to stay to dinner. "Say he didn't even shake hands, Moran? What for? What you do to him?" "Not one blessed thing, ma, only he wanted to know why I wasn't gladder to see him." Then Moran looked indignant. "Say them words, Moran?" "No, but he hinted em."
"What did you say then?"
"I just asked, a meaning nothing in the wide world, ma, I asked him if he knew where Mr. Pike had gone." And that were answer enough to hurt his feelings.
"What you want to know where Matt Pike's gone for, Moran?"
"I didn't care about knowing, ma, but I didn't like the way Sim talked."
"Look here, Moran. Look straight at me. You'll be mighty fur off your feet, if you let Matt Pike put things in your head, that hain't no business of being there, and special, if you find yourself a wantin' to know where he's a perambulating in his everlasting meanderin's. Not a cent has he paid for his board, and which your pa say he have understanding with him about a loan for his absentees, which is all right enough, but which it's now going on to 3 months, and what is coming to us I need and I want. He ought, your pa ought to let me bargain with Matt Pike, because he know he don't understand figures like Matt Pike. He don't know exactly what the bargain were, for I've asked him, and he always begins with a multiplying of words and never answers me." On his next return from his travels, Mr. Pike noticed a coldness in Mrs. Fluker's manner, and this enhanced his praise of the house. The last week of the 3rd month came. Mr. Pike was often noticed, before and after meals, standing at the desk in the hotel office called in those times the bar room, engaged in making calculations. The day before the contract expired, Mrs. Fluker, who had not indulged herself with a single holiday since they had been in town, left Moran in charge of the house, and rode forth, spending part of the day with Mrs. Markman, Sim's mother. All were glad to see her, of course, and she returned smartly, freshened by the visit. That night she had a talk with Moran, and oh, how Moran did cry. The very last day came. Like insurance policies, the contract was to expire at a certain hour. Sim Markman came just before dinner, to which he was sent for by Mrs. Fluker, who had seen him as he rode into town. "Hello, Sim," said Mr. Pike, as he took his seat opposite him. "You here? What's the news in the country? How's your health? How's crops?" "Just moderate, Mr. Pike. Got little business with you after dinner, if you can spare time."
"All right. Got a little matter with Pink here first, 'twon't take long. See you are after a midget, Sim." Never had the deputy been more gracious and witty. He talked and talked, out-talking even Mr. Fluker. He was the only man in town who could do that. He winked at Moran as he put questions to Sim, some of the words employed in which Sim had never heard before. Yet Sim held up as well as he could,
and after dinner followed Moran with some little dignity into the parlor. They had not been there more than 10 minutes, when Mrs. Fluker was heard to walk rapidly along the passage leading from the dining room, to enter her own chamber for only a moment, then to come out and rush to the parlor door with the gig whip in her hand. Such uncommon conduct in a woman like Mrs. Pink Fluker of course needs explanation. When all the other boarders had left the house, the deputy and Mr. Fluker having repaired to the bar room, the former said, "Now, Pink, for our settlement, as you say your wife think we better have one. I'd a been willin' to let accounts keep on a runnin', knowin' what a straightforward sort o' man you was. Your count, if I ain't mistaken, is just $33, even money. Is that so, was it not? That's it, to a dollar, Matt 3 times 'll Ben make 33, don't it? It do, Pink, well Ben times 3, jez what you please. Now here's my count, on which you'll see, Pink, that not nary cent have I charged for influence. I has influenced a considerable custom to this house, as you know, Bowden and Trenton. But I done that out o' my respects of you and Mrs. Fluker, and your keeping of a far, I'll say, as I've said frequent, a very far house. I let them influences go to friendship, if you'll take it so. Will you, Pink Fluker? Certainly, Matt, and I'm 1,000 times obliged to you, and, say no more, Pink, on that pint o' view. If I like a man, I know how to treat him. Now as to the pints o' absentees, my business as deputy sheriff has took me away from this inconsiderable town frequent, hain't it? It have, Matt, or something else, Murr and I were expectin', and, jez so. But a public officer, Pink, when Judy call on him to go, in fact he got to goth, as the scripture say, ain't that so? I s'pose so, Matt, by good rights, officials speakin'. Mr. Fluker felt that he was becoming a little confused. Jez so. Now, Pink, I were to have credits for my absentees cord into Trenton and single meal boaters and sleepers, ain't that so? Aye, something o' that sort, Matt, he answered vaguely. Jez so. Now look here, drawing from his pocket a paper. Item 1. 28 dinners at half a dollar makes $14, don't it? Jez so. 25 breakfasts at a quarter makes 6 1/4, which make dinners and breakfasts 20 1/4. Follow me up, as I go up, Pink. 25 suppers at a quarter makes 6 1/4, and which them added to the 20 1/4 makes them 26 1/2. Follow, Pink, and if you catch me in any mistakes in the curin' and addin', pint it out. 22 1/2 beds, and I say half, Pink, because you remember one night, when them A-G-U-S-T-Y lawyers got here about midnight on the way to court, rather than have you too bad cramped, I risked to make way for 2 of 'em, yet, as I had one good nap, I didn't think I ought to put it down but for half. Them makes $5 half an S-E-B and pence, and which cured on to the t'other 26 1/2, fetches the whole cabal to just $32 an S-E-B and pence. But I made up my mind I'd fling out that S-E-B and pence, and jez call it a dollar even money, and which here's the solid silver. In spite of the rapidity with which this enumeration of counter charges was made, Mr. Fluker commenced perspiring at the first item, and when the balance was announced his face was covered with huge drops. It was at this juncture that Mrs. Fluker, who, well knowing her husband's unfamiliarity with complicated accounts, had felt her duty to be listening near the barroom door, left, and quickly afterwards appeared before Moran and Sim as I have represented. You think Matt Pike ain't trying to settle with your pa with a dollar? I'm going to make him keep his dollar, and I'm going to give him something to go along with it. The good Lord have mercy upon us! Exclaimed Moran, springing up and catching hold of her mother's skirts, as she began her advance towards the bar room. Oh, Ma! For the Lord's sake, Sim, if you care anything for me in this wide world, don't let Ma go into that room. Mrs. Fluker, said Sim, rising instantly, wait just 2 minutes till I see Mr. Pike on some pressing business, I won't keep you over 2 minutes a-waitin'. He took her, set her down in a chair trembling, looked at her a moment, as she began to weep, Then, going out and closing the door, strode rapidly to the bar room. "Let me help you settle your board bill, Mr. Pike, by paying you a little when I owe you." Doubling his fist, he struck out with a blow that felled the deputy to the floor. Then catching him by his heels, he dragged him out of the house into the street. Lifting his foot above his face, he said, "You stir till I tell you, and I'll stomp your nose down even with the balance of your mean face. 'Tain't exactly my business how you cheated Mr. Fluker, though, 'pon my soul, I never knowed a trifliner, loadner trick. But I owed you myself for your talking about and your lying about me, and now I've paid you, and if you only knowed it, I've saved you from a gig whipping. Now you may get up." "Here's his dollar, son," said Mr. Fluker, throwing it out of the window. "Nervy say make him take it." The vanquished, not daring to refuse, pocketed the coin, and slunk away amid the jeers of a score of villagers, who had been drawn to the scene. In all human probability the late omission of the shaking of Sims and Moran's hands was compensated at their parting that afternoon. I am more confident on this point, because at the end of the year those hands were joined inseparably by the preacher. But this was when they had all gone back to their old home, for if Mr. Fluker did not become fully convinced that his mathematical education was not advanced quite enough for all the exigencies of hotel keeping, his wife declared that she had had enough of it, and that she and Moran were going home. Mr. Fluker may be said, therefore, to have followed, rather than led, his family on the return. As for the deputy, finding that if he did not leave it voluntarily he would be drummed out of the village, he departed, whither I do not remember if anybody ever knew.